Welcome to another episode of Out the Rabbit Hole here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're also streaming at KUCI.org. Had our usual opening music there from the Stooges, I Got a Right. I'm Robert Larson. It's January 26th, 2007, 4:06 on the clock here. Before we get started, a couple little reminders. As always, the opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the KUCI staff or management or the UC Board of Regents. And if you want to contact me, you can email me at rglarson@kuci.org. You can also hit me up on MySpace. That's myspace.com/outtherabbithole. We have a special guest today, back by popular demand, Greg Bishop. Greg's been on the show twice before. We interviewed him about his book, Project Beta, the story of Paul Benowitz, National Security, and the Creation of a Modern UFO Myth. We also talked to him about his other book, Weird California, Your Travel Guide to California's Local Legends and Best Kept Secrets. Greg is always involved in interesting work. He is now a blogger on a blog site called UFO Mystic. Let's get your mic going here. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hey, Robert. Good to be back.
It's always good to have you. And
where do these demands come in to have me back?
These demands. Oh, you would not believe the emails and the MySpace comments and the all kinds of letters, handwritten letters in skywriting.
Oh, I got to get a few and frame them.
Yeah. They're all requesting Greg Bishop back. But no, it's always great to have a little change of pace with you. We talk a lot on this show about the parapolitical, which is something you get into, but you also get a little more into the paranormal and weird notions of mind and stories of folklore and collective unconscious and mass hallucination and things that are mysterious, like UFOs.
And, yeah.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about this website or blog site, I should say, UFO Mystic.
Yeah, I didn't come up with that name. The person that runs the site comes up with it. It's he pronounced it UFO Mystic, which I guess is supposed to be clever. What's funny is that I looked up mystic in the dictionary, and it said something like undescribable in human terms or something like that. That was one of the definitions. I really like that. The site is written by Nick Redfern and myself until they get some more people signed up. And basically, we look at the UFO subject, people involved with it, different theories about it. And the difference with our website is we kind of stay away from the aliens are coming here from another planet idea, because if you want that kind of information, you can go anywhere else. Recently, I just put up a thing called Aliens and Drugs about the drug DMT and how people that were in a study, a scientific study using that drug, described almost to the letter what people in abduction experiences have described. So that's the kind of stuff we have on the site. Information you probably won't get anywhere else, or you'd have to know the exact search terms to find. We've got it there.
Yeah, well, what you just said about I love that, and that's a way you and I have connected, and people probably have figured out that we're old friends and that we've discussed some of these issues for years and years. That the subject of UFOs comes up, and you get the general two reactions of the people who just roll their eyes and, oh, you believe in that nonsense, and then the other people who, oh, Space Brothers coming here to help us, and, abductions and all this kind of stuff. And you and I have always been in this place of a middle ground, an excluded middle of where we don't know if UFOs are real or not, or what real means.
And the minute you make up your mind, you've stopped learning. The funny thing is that when you say there's people, you know, people that say roll their eyes, and then people that say, oh, yeah, they're here, the Space Brothers are going to help us, they both have a belief system. Those are beliefs. You think, you know, do you believe in UFOs? It's like, well, the people that don't have a belief system, too. And belief is, I don't like that word when people, you know, they come up, do you believe in UFOs? And I say, for one thing, UFOs encompasses a lot. And for another thing, belief is a word I don't like. I'm interested. I think there's something going on. I think there's something besides humans that are interacting with us. Yes. I if you want to say I have a belief, I suppose, that's as far as it goes.
Yeah. Well, I would say I don't have a belief. I would say that I know that there are UFOs. I know that there are things that are literally unidentified flying objects,
right,
things
exactly.
that are in the skies that we do not know what they are.
That's just about undeniable, yes.
Yes, yes. So that's An interesting place to take us. And you mentioned the piece you wrote recently, and this also has been an area that I've found fascinating, is that the crossover between what we think of as UFOs and mind or consciousness, and therefore things that perturb mind or consciousness, such as psychedelic drugs. And Terrence McKenna, you mentioned in the article on the blog site UFO Mystic, and Rick Strassman were two people that were really big in promoting this notion. So,
you know what? It's funny. They were kind of big in promoting the notion, but they weren't big in promoting like the UFO idea. They just said, this is very interesting. In fact, somebody on the site, they commented, they said, Terrence McKenna, I was actually putting down a lot of UFO people for being too wishy-washy, or they just annoyed him. And I said, well, of course they annoyed him. They're standing around talking about, from his point of view, they're standing around talking about things flying through the sky and possible abductions and all this. And he's out there shaking hands with aliens as far as he's concerned. You know, I don't know how you feel about psychedelics and drugs and all that, people listening, but if you haven't read up on it or talked to anybody about it or, you know, really gotten into it, it's not just this weird thing that Timothy Leary told everybody to take drugs and Nixon called him the most dangerous man in America. It's people that I've talked to have just said, well, it's just one of those things that you can't have this experience and not be changed by it. And you also can't have experience and totally explain it to people in language. That's another weird thing. And people come out of it fine. You know, it's, you don't have, unless there's somebody doing drugs every day. And if that's the problem, then they've got another problem besides drugs. So, yeah, it's a way to open up the mind to a different experience. And yeah, some of these have to do with contacting something that doesn't appear to be human, that isn't coming in from inside your own head.
Right. And I will add an extra disclaimer here besides the one I had at the beginning of the show. And I would say that I am not promoting the idea that anybody do any drugs, legal or illegal or otherwise. But I am I want to put the notion out there that some of these things that we call psychedelic that affect the mind people can get a very
profound.
Thanks, Greg. Profound experience with these things. But I also will say that they can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, if you don't know what you're, it's that set and setting thing. I mean, if you've got a lot of problems in the first place, and you do one of these psychedelics in a very unfriendly environment, yeah, you're probably gonna have a bad time.
Right.
You
right.
know, just about with anything. I mean, anything that is going to push you over the edge in some way, if you're close to it, is not a good thing. No.
So let's talk about this idea that Terrence McKenna, I think was the first one to talk about it, is that people who do certain types of psychedelic drugs, the psilocybin mushrooms, DMT, ayahuasca, these things are all related, that they often report visions and feelings and experiences that seem to be very close to what people report who have UFO abduction experiences.
Right. I put a quote in, I can't see it right now from here, but there was a quote, Dr. Strassman, he's a medical doctor. He did this study with the support or the approval of the DEA and the government, injecting these people with dimethyltryptamine, which was, I think, it was supposed to be an animal tranquilizer, but they discovered people were having psychedelic trips on it. But in his notes, he kept coming up, and with these notes, he'd take notes and talk to people after their experience. People were saying, I met them. They were there. They were very interested in me. They were very interested in my fear and my reaction to them. Other things like they looked like stick figures or praying mantises or even cactuses. Well, the exception of the cactus line, I think everybody is, if you've read any of the UFO abduction literature, that's exactly what people say, that have had supposedly had been abducted or had some kind of interaction with what we perceive as big-headed, bug-eyed aliens.
That's Dr. Rick Strassman, his book DMT, The Spirit Molecule. And when you said DMT, dimethyltryptamine, I don't think that actually was an animal tranquilizer. I think you're confusing that with ketamine.
Ketamine, I'm sorry.
Which ketamine does give some very similar experiences.
Yes.
And we can talk about John Lilly and his work with that. But DMT is actually a
alkaloid.
is something that's actually found in our brains. It's endogenous to the human brain, mm-hmm. and actually, as there are different theories about this, and McKenna has talked about it, how that in dreams that it's released somewhat in dreams and released in large amounts in things like a near-death experience,
right?
And maybe also released in large amounts when people have what seems to be a UFO abduction experience where they're not actually taking a drug. It's just the drug that's already in their brain is becoming more activated. Now, some people would say, well, therefore, that just proves that UFO experiences are not real. Alien experiences are not real. It's just hallucination.
Well, you get into a lot of discussion and philosophical discussion about what's real, what's not, what the definition of real is. I had a discussion with somebody on UFO Mystic about that very subject, and my idea was that stuff coming into your mind, everything coming into your mind has happened just a second ago or a millisecond ago, so it's not really real until you perceive it. And people say, well, then it's out there. It's like, but it doesn't make any difference until you have reacted to it. You have perceived it and everybody else has. And there's certain things like this, which not everybody reacts to the same way, the drug or the abduction experience or whatever. And then there's other things like, you know, you turn on a faucet and the water comes out. Yeah, well, that's a pretty robust kind of thing. That's going to happen almost every time as long as your plumbing is working. But when you get into these other areas, it gets kind of misty. It gets kind of it gets very subjective. But the funny thing is that some of these subjective things where people were not front loaded with, you know, you're going to see aliens and all that, they kept coming up time and time again with the same things that UFO abductees were saying. And I don't know why that is. I mean, either there's something out there that appears to us as aliens or in different ways, or that yeah, like you said, the DMT can be activated. Maybe if there's aliens out there, when they want to abduct somebody, they push that little psychological button that floods your brain with DMT, and they can communicate to you that way. I don't know. I mean, I say these things on the site, and people say, well, now you're saying so-and-so, and now you're saying, you know, what do you mean? And it's like, look, we're getting a hypothesis, and we're playing with the hypothesis for a while without being dogmatically attached to it, because you can learn a lot more, and I think it's a lot more interesting that way.
I totally agree with you, and I would say with something that's really I thought was kind of humorous in Rick Strassman's book, DMT, The Spirit Molecule, where he said, well, you were just saying, well, people without any front-loaded information will report these same sorts of images, and some people say, well, then that means that maybe it is something real out there. And then other people would say, well, the reason a lot of these people are seeing the same thing is because these things are archetypal, and they are somehow images, symbols that are in the human brain to see UFOs and aliens and that kind of thing. And actually, Rick Strassman came with that explanation during his experiment with these people, after shooting them up with DMT and letting them have their trip, and then coming back an hour later and say, well, how was it? And then he would explain all these things, and Rick would say, yeah, you know, there are these archetypal images, putting it in that notion, and they would say, no, this stuff that I saw was real. Yeah. I was really aboard an alien spacecraft, and he could not convince them otherwise.
Yeah, and he the fact that they all described basically the same thing and the same kind of interaction, and that's another thing, interaction. I mean, how much can you interact with an archetypal image? You know, and they had basically the same experience, but there are all kinds of little, you know, changes in it. Yes, there was some other being there that they thought that they saw there. When I say thought, I'm saying their experience. I'm not saying they didn't have that experience or it was fake. They all basically had the same kind of experience with, you know, individual little colorings of their own. Maybe their subconscious expectations of it, or maybe the channel they opened up was filled with a different kind of static. It reminds me of that William Burroughs quote, maybe all these people are tuning into a universal message, except they have faulty radios.
That's a great metaphor. You said earlier that sometimes people would experience things that could not easily be easily be explained as just hallucination, in the sense that they were getting information that had, it seemed to be that it would have to be from outside of them. And do you have any specific examples of that?
Well, the everything we've talked about, and plus the fact that this has been going on for thousands of years, everybody says it's coming from outside of them. Different people get the same message who have never talked to each other or communicated about it or read a book about it. That would indicate to me that either there's something buried really deep in our collective unconscious somewhere that comes out exactly the same way, or there is some external consciousness, intelligence, or something trying to communicate with us. I mean, if I got to get close to a belief, like I said, that's one of my core beliefs on this subject, is that, yeah, there is something out there that's not human. Where it's from, I do not know. It could be from inside us. It could be, you know, on this planet. It could be completely discarnate and be...
ultra-dimensional.
Existing in all times and all spaces simultaneously, constantly, and then it kind of has to step down its communications to be able to have us get a glimpse of what it's like and what it's trying to say to us, or them, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and I know there are these reports from the near-death experience, out-of-body experience literature of people being on an operating table and claiming that they went out of body, and then actually whatever it was, their consciousness, their spirit, or whatever, going into another room and then coming back and reporting things that they saw in that room where they never actually physically were at.
Right. You know, it's funny. The first way they found this out was, I think, in the 50s or 60s, they found out that when people were under anesthesia, they could actually hear what the doctors were saying. So they instituted this rule in operating rooms at that time that you weren't supposed to say anything, because people were hearing the doctor saying, you know, three drinks, he doesn't survive 5 minutes off the operating table. It's like, you know, the person would hear that, and it was bad for their prognosis, for their recovery. So, you know, that was the first indication that, you know, when you're passed out, or appear to be, you know, unconscious, that you're still fully conscious of what's going on. And then past that, people started reporting, like you said, going other places, seeing other things, hearing what the doctor said, hearing what people said in other rooms, you know, things like that. And it's funny, because the same thing happens on some of the psychedelics too, where you get this idea that you can hear somebody that's saying something miles away or whatever. I mean, it opens up, some of them seem to open up some kind of weird channel where you become disconnected from normal time flow and spatial considerations.
This is Out the Rabbit Hole, KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're also on the web at KUCI.org. I'm Robert Larson. We're speaking today with Greg Bishop, and he is the author of a couple of wonderful books, Project Beta, The Story of Paul Benowitz, National Security, and the Creation of a Modern UFO Myth, Weird California, Your Travel Guide to California's Local Legends and Best Kept Secrets. And he has recently started blogging at UFO Mystic, and that's ufomystic.com,
mm-hmm.
UFOMYSTIC.com. And Greg, you also do a radio show. Title of that again?
Radio Misterioso.
Radio Misterioso.
We don't have the echo button on the board anymore at the place I do that. It's an internet show. It's not as widespread as this one. And that's on Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific time at killradio.org.
Killradio.org. Sundays?
8 to 10 p.m. PST.
All right, PST. We're 4 to 5 here at PST. So, let's talk a little bit about that, because you and I have this mutual love of radio. And I think at a young age, we both got really excited about that. You and I were talking a little bit before the show about it, and I just remember being a kid going on trips with the parents, being in the back of the station wagon and the radio being on, and you're traveling, and as you're traveling, stations fade in and out, and there's all these kind of odd signals trying to, you know, be on your radio, and lots of popping and crackling and all that. It was just really fascinating to me. And sometimes you'd pick up these oddball shows in weird places. And
yeah, from little towns way off in the middle of nowhere that you couldn't normally hear, especially like you said, when you get out of the noise of the cities. I was thinking about that as you said that, and as we discussed it earlier, one of the first things I can remember about messing around with radio, I would listen to a radio station in San Diego, a rock and roll station, when I was like 8 or 10 years old, and Shotgun Tom Kelly was on. Remember, he's on K-Earth or something now. But he used to be on San Diego station KCBQ. But the funny thing was, I would listen to the music, and my dad had a reel-to-reel tape recorder that he'd bought in the 1950s or 60s or something. And I took I pulled that thing out of the closet, plugged it in, and I started recording stuff off the radio. And when Shotgun Tom would come on, I would pull the microphone away from the radio, and I would do my own DJ stuff in between. And then I started doing like audio plays with friends of mine and doing parodies of TV shows and things when I was like 8, 10, 12 years old. So yeah, it goes back really far, and everybody comes into it in a different way. And then I notice when I start doing radio, I start listening to other people and thinking about the history of it. One of my favorite radio hosts ever was Long John Neville, who was basically the Art Bell of the 1950s and 60s. He was broadcasting from New York. I've got a lot of old recordings of him and this other guy, Gene Shepard, who just came on for an hour every night of the week, I think, and just extemporaneous, just told stories about his childhood, about stuff that he'd seen, about weird ideas he had, about, you know, anything, weird old movies he used to see. And for some reason, he was able to be this great storyteller. And that was a unique thing back then. He was the only person doing that. I'm a big fan of his. And then, of course, when we were driving back from San Francisco one time, we heard the first time we heard Art Bell, like in, what was it, 93 or something?
It was a while back. And yeah, there's something magical about those moments. You catch something, and I know maybe some of you younger people listening are kind of don't even listen to radio. It's just all internet and downloading and podcasting. And, you know, it's great. You can find so much easily on the internet now. But those days of when it was just broadcast radio and you discover these things by chance. And introduction there to Art Bell, and he talking about all these UFO things and a little bit different take on it than you and I have, but he actually did have Rick Strassman on his show, and
he's Terrence had McKenna. Everybody on.
Yeah, so he's had some of these people that are more in line with how you and I think about the UFO subject.
And he's not dumb. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he's probably one of the best radio people working now for interviews, I think. I don't know exactly what he believes from all these people, but the questions he asks, you don't care what he believes, because he gets stuff out of people that you wouldn't think they would be talking about sometimes. When I was on the one time, I realized he hadn't even read my book, and he didn't know what was going on, but it was a great interview because he knew how to steer the interview properly and the subject matter to make me talk about what the book was about in an inquiring way that is interesting to an audience and that holds an audience through the commercial breaks and all that, which is why he's probably done so well and made so much money and been so successful. More power to him.
Yeah, no, Art Bell is great. I give him all kinds of kudos, although, you know, sometimes I think some of the stuff on the show is a little silly, but he's been very successful.
Yeah.
And it's
he's not going to stay on by doing something you and I agree with all the time, you know?
I know, because we're oddballs.
Yeah, I mean, you and I get to almost practically do what we want, which is wonderful, but that's not going to make us Art Bell. Got to think about that.
Yes, you do have to think about that. Well, you don't really have to, but you can. Let's talk about, recently you wrote a piece on UFO Mystic about somebody who's been a huge influence on you and me and several people we know and several people we don't know. He's just been a huge influence. And I'm speaking of Robert Anton Wilson, who recently passed away. And so you wrote a sort of a eulogy and talk about that, about Robert Anton Wilson, who he was and how he impacted you.
That's a big subject. Bob Wilson was a writer, a philosophizer, advocate for libertarianism, and not really libertarianism as we think of the party, but free thought and personal freedom, and a critic of any kind of fundamentalist thought, which really affected me, because you don't even notice it, especially in yourself, until you start have somebody point it out to you. And Wilson did this for me. And funny, he talks about imprints when you're at a vulnerable state in your life, and whatever happens to you then, it stays with you for a long time, like when you're a child. Or there's a tragedy that happens. And I think my girlfriend left me, I lost my job, and there was some other horrible thing. All happened within the space of 3 days. So for about 6 months, I didn't know if I wanted to kill myself or what. And for some reason, I happened upon Wilson's writings right at that point, and it left a huge impression on me. And the first book I read of his was The New Inquisition, Irrational Rationalism and the Citadel of Science, which was basically about how the institution of science had become like the church was in the Middle Ages. If you say something that's not in line with dogma, that nobody's going to listen to you, and you might even be attacked for it, and worse. And you know, I didn't really think about that before this, and I you know, most people don't. And if you look at UFO mystic, I'm constantly harping on a term I came up with based on Wilson, fundamentalist skeptics. People call them debunkers, but the thing is, there's a lot of bunk that needs to be taken out of things. If somebody's a debunker, it means they're, you know, pointing out the bunk. But then there are people that there's no amount of evidence or discussion or anything that's going to make them change their mind. That's a fundamentalist way of thinking. That's what Robert Anton Wilson pointed out in The New Inquisition and other books that he wrote. He was also a fiction writer. He wrote something a lot of people would have heard about, may have heard about, the Illuminatus trilogy, three books, which I can't remember the names of the three books, but it's, if you get, I think you can get them in one book. It's right. Just called Illuminatus, mm-hmm. Big, thick book, basically taking all the conspiracy theories and paranoia and fears and all this of that people had been kicking around for in the 70s. And I think he wrote this with Robert Shea in the late 70s, early 80s. And combined him into one grand, you know, totally paranoid conspiracy. And as it turned out, apparently, you know, is being controlled by the Illuminati and the Discordian Church and etc. But he just took the paranoia to such a ridiculous extreme that actually, when you get finished reading the book, if you're impressionable enough, you don't know what to believe anymore, which is exactly the effect that he wanted. Some of his nonfiction books do that too. I mean, if you take them too literally and don't take literally what he says about, you know, being stuck in a belief system, yeah, he'll make you paranoid. And well, I thought that was wonderful.
Right. And so he was kind of like a trickster.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was also like a sort of a Zen master, in the sense that he would just jack you around so much, and he'd be giving you these little truths and things, but then he'd throw in weird things and jack you around to a place to where you're like, now what? And you have to throw everything out.
Yeah.
And that the thing I think is fascinating about Illuminatus and that whole thing, that he created a lot of things that were fictional, we suppose, and there were things that he put in there as jokes, things about the Illuminati, and there are many people out there now who took those things that
literally, yeah.
I think he probably most likely created as jokes or just fictional,
or something that was a rumor, and then he connected a lot of other disinformation. He connected a lot of other stuff to it that people kind of knew to be true or had a very strong suspicion, and then to their minds it became true because he made it so in the book. And it becomes one of those things where somebody's thinking when they're reading this, I mean, is he actually trying to tell us what's going on because he really knows and he's just trying to make a fictional book out of it? And you know what? That's all true.
He's playing all those games?
He's playing all those games, and it might be true.
But it might be true. But, you know, I...
Some of it.
Right. So I think there's some people that take it very literal, and that he put all that stuff out there fictional, and they think he really is this head or the secret person in the Illuminati, and that he cannot put this out in a nonfiction form, so he's writing it all in fiction, and it's all really true. And that's possible, I suppose. I don't think it's likely, but there are many people out there who do take it very literal. And the conspiracy theories that float around now about the New World Order and the Illuminati and everything being controlled by one secret satanic...
Yeah, it was written about over 25 years ago by Mr. Wilson.
Right, and they have no clue that it even started with him.
Yeah.
And they take this as literal fact, and you can go, there's websites all over the internet, and we on this program talk quite a bit about the whole 9/11 truth movement and getting behind what really happened there. And it does appear that there is very likely a conspiracy behind 9/11 other than the one we're told with the 19 hijackers. But then some people extrapolate beyond that and create this whole thing, and it all goes high up into the Illuminati and there's...
Yeah, the international bankers and then et cetera, et cetera.
Right, and the connections are tenuous. And I think it's a little, I shy away from that because it's not something you can prove.
Well, it's funny because people that are into this, there's very a lot of different psychological reasons for believing this, but I think the most important one, and the one we should really look at, is people's sense of their loss of power and control over things, and that they have no say in their lives anymore. And if that happens, you virtually creates a bunch of people a whole class of people that think that everybody's out to get them, and that there's nothing they can do about it, and everything's hopeless. And sometimes I tend to agree with them, and then other times I either get realistic or optimistic, and I don't. And that's one of Wilson's lessons, actually, is, you know, keep that in mind. Keep a sense of humor. Take everything with a grain of salt and consider your options.
You were just reading my mind, Greg. I was just going to say that. That's the whole thing. There's so many people out there that, you know, conspiracy theory, it's great. I mean, conspiracies are all throughout history. If you don't believe conspiracies are sometimes behind things, you're completely naive. So conspiracy theory, it's a great thing to look into, but some people let it just become such a disempowering thing,
right?
And it's just, oh, it's the Illuminati and there's nothing we can do about it, or we can try to expose it, but you know, we're never going to bring them down, and they just keep going. It's a bigger all-encompassing conspiracy. And I just bring it back. It's so disempowering, and I almost feel like people get off on being disempowered. And whereas Wilson,
it's like watching a scary movie or going on a thrill ride or something.
Whereas Wilson, I think, was very empowering. His message, again, what you just said about humor, you're not going to get Robert Anton Wilson if you check your sense of humor at the door.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to bring your sense of humor along, and that's all. It was always part of it, and you got to be. And he also was about, you know, as far as being empowered, saying, "Well, sure, there might be this big conspiracy, or this or that, and all that, but it's very unlikely that there's one big, huge conspiracy, because people who are into are so addicted to power never can trust the other people who are addicted to power. So there's always infighting. And you see this in things like the way organized crime works, and somebody always knocks off someone.
It's funny because Wilson said, you know, somebody told him once, if you want to see how the world really works, if you want to get a kind of a picture, read The Godfather.
I totally agree with that. And also, you know, again, getting back to the humor. Well, another thing that Wilson said, I thought this was great, was, create your own conspiracy.
Right, exactly. Where you and your friends are the head of it.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just as easy to imagine that as a bunch of other people you don't know or don't know about controlling your life. But the main thing, and the thing that came off the UFO Mystic site we talked about just a little while ago, was that the main lesson, I think, from Wilson that I got, and that other people have too, and if they haven't and they've been made paranoid by his writing, should get this idea, was that let's have a hypothesis, let's make a crazy hypothesis and play around with it a while, but don't become dogmatically attached to it. I mean, I don't know how many times I can repeat that, because there's so many benefits to looking at conspiracies and UFOs and Bigfoot and all these anomalies and just basically anything that there's a big question mark. Let's look at a bunch of different hypotheses and see where they take us. You know, just follow them to some kind of, even not even conclusion, but follow them as far as they can go. Till maybe you're laughing yourself silly.
Right. And so, as we said, you know, don't check the sense of humor at the door, but do check the dogma at the door.
Right, exactly. Dogma is just belief systems and dogma. I put that in another post about belief systems, and I said BS for short, and that's directly from Wilson.
All right, let's go to a little music, Greg, and then we'll get back to this. This is Out the Rabbit Hole, KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, also on the web at KUCI.org. Robert Larson here speaking with Greg Bishop. We'll be back in just a little bit here. Okay, welcome back to Out the Rabbit Hole here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're also on the web at KUCI.org. I'm Robert Larson, and today I'm having a discussion in studio with Greg Bishop, and we've been talking about all kinds of things he's involved with, and he blogs at UFO Mystic. Go check that out at ufomystic.com. Some very provocative posts there. He's also the author of two books that we've discussed previously on the show: Project Beta, the story of Paul Benowitz, National Security, and the Creation of a Modern UFO Myth. His other book, Weird California, Your Travel Guide to California's Local Legends and Best Kept Secrets. And he also hosts a radio show, Radio Misterioso.
Yeah, well, It's supposed to be sort of Spanish, since I'm in L.A. I don't have any you know, Hispanic in my background. What song was that we just listened to?
That was something you just turned me on to. That was track 10. Who's the artist?
Messer für Frau Müller, which actually transmogrified into the Messer Troops, which is they are a Russian band from Leningrad. Well, they changed back to St. Petersburg, actually. That track was called Pervotella from the Sex Lagoon. That's just an example of the kind of stuff you'll hear on Radio Misterioso on killradio.org Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m.
So let's talk a little bit about your two books. We've been talking about, well, just before the break, Robert Anton Wilson. And I'll just to close out that subject, I will just say to go check him on the internet. He's got several books out, and you can read some synopses of his different books. And I, if you're at all interested in exploration of mind and consciousness and playing with ideas in a way that makes your mind expand, you'll want to read some of his stuff and check out Greg's little blog there at UFO Mystic. And that, what's the title on that? Is it on that piece on Wilson?
It's just Robert Anton Wilson, RIP. It was a eulogy I wrote for him on the day during, well, he died at about 4:10 in the morning, and I wrote it in the afternoon. Right after I finished writing that piece, my hard drive died. I had to go out and get another hard drive. Very strange little synchronicity there.
Bob Wilson from the grave giving you a little message there, putting an exclamation point on the piece you had just written about him. No, I mean, Philip D. Scott Appel, who's also a close personal friend of Bob Wilson's, or was also a close personal friend of Philip K. Dick. And after Philip K. Dick died, Scott Appel had some experiences like that where he'd be writing something about him or have a dream about him, and then something would happen in his waking life that would just put that little exclamation point on it, like it's a little bit too weird of a coincidence for that.
You know what? I think if you put enough energy into something, especially something that's somebody like Phil Dick, who was very interested in the interplay between the subconscious and the conscious and the real quote world. If you put enough energy into something like that, it becomes like magic. And I think it excites something somewhere in that, often that symbolic realm that we don't know about and can't really see. And it comes back to you somehow. I mean, it creates meaning. This is what I got from Dean Radin when I interviewed him, was that meaning and intention was a dimension that connected these other, connected us to this symbolic non-space time bound realm. Does that make any sense? Do I sound like a drugged out hippie?
Yeah. You do a little, but that's I sort of like that kind of thing. But say that again. What did he say? The quote from Dean Radin.
He said that meaning and meaning, you know, what you something that has some relevance or you have some feeling for,
right?
Meaning or intention, what you intend to do, is a dimension as well, along with time and space and, you know, length and breadth and width and all that. He's gave me this idea. He gifted me with this idea, which was very nice of him, that in these experiments, ESP experiments they'd been doing, that intention, what you want out of something or what you want to put into something, somehow may tie together these other dimensions whereby you can jump over time and space. And when you send that thing about Scott Appel, that, you know, he'd be writing about him or thinking about him, and then there'd be some little thing to show him, something anomalous to show him that something was going on, or just to show him, you know, if you want to be very literal about it, that Phil Dick was somewhere saying, yes, you're right, and I'm glad you're talking about me and remembering me or whatever. I don't know if Phil Dick's consciousness was doing that, but you know, when it became discarnate from his body, maybe there's a way to do things that you don't have to, you know, you have access to all history from the beginning of time and everything from here to the end of the universe. It doesn't make any difference anymore.
Yeah. And so Dean Radin, people, if they're interested in him, he's with Princeton Engineering and Anomaly Research. Is that
no, he
no?
never was.
No,
he's up at, what's that called? The thing that Edgar Mitchell put together. the research institute, the former astronaut Edgar Mitchell. I can't remember the name of the thing.
Institute of Noetic Sciences.
That is where Dean Radin is now. That's what his residency is now.
Okay, so go ahead and Google that if you're interested in Dean Radin, Institute of Noetic Sciences.
IONS, I-O-N-S.
I always liked that name. So, Greg, like I said, we had two previous shows where we discussed your two separate books. Let's anything to you maybe update on the whole story, the Project Beta, the story of Paul Benowitz, national security, and the creation of a modern UFO myth?
There is, but I'm trying to think of a way to make it relevant for this audience. There's a bunch of stuff I talked about in the book where, basically the book was about a guy that had seen strange lights and been getting strange signals from the Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque. He went to the Air Force with his concerns and said, I think there's UFOs here and I think they're trying to communicate. And of course, the Air Force said, okay. So they had him. The reason they were interested is because there's a lot of secret projects going on there. There still are now. And they were back in the late 70s and early 80s when this happened. And instead of telling him to cut it out and not pay any attention anymore and be a good American, they encouraged him. They said, yes, well, maybe there are these things going on. We'd like you to help us out with this. And the reason they did that is because they wanted to find out how he found out what he did, because they didn't want the Russians finding out. This was still in the Cold War.
And they kind of mind-effed him.
Yeah, they listened to what he had to say and then kind of elaborated on it to the next step to draw him a little further away from what they were doing and towards this idea that there was some sort of alien invasion, which he had pretty well put together himself before he got in touch with the Air Force, and the Air Force just encouraged it. Because not only would they be able to find out how he found out what he did, because he built a sophisticated radio system and decoding system on his own in the late 70s when nobody had personal computers. He built his own computers and started figuring out this stuff they had spent years and millions of dollars putting together. That's not good. If he can do that, who's to say that some Russian guy saying, you know, he's just some dumb guy sitting next to the Air Force base is not going to be listening too. So they want to know how he did it, who he was talking to, and what the networks were. Because they're obviously, you know, we had spies in Russia, they had spies here, and all that Cold War stuff was going on. Now, recently, since the book came out, there was something that was on Art Bell that was a big deal called Excalibur. Or no, it wasn't Excalibur. I can't remember the name of the project, but it had to do with people an exchange of human Earth astronaut Air Force people actually going to some planet, and then they sent some aliens here, like in Close Encounters. And the rumor was that had actually happened. It had happened sometime in the 60s. They had spent some time on this other planet, like 8 years or something like that, and came back. Absolutely no way to prove this whatsoever.
Just speculation. It's just somebody's fantasy, not as far as we can tell.
As far as we can tell. But the thing was, you know, Whitley Strieber and Linda Howe and people like that were saying, oh, yes, we heard about this way back when. You know, it's like, well, it was a rumor back then, too. So the funny thing is, the same people that I talked about in my book and some that I didn't were involved in this story, too. In fact, when I went on Art Bell, Richard Doty went on the radio, on national radio, for the first time. He was the guy that ran the disinformation operation against Paul Benowitz. And suddenly he agrees to come on the radio with me. Mm-hmm. He starts stirring the pot again about UFO stuff. why are they doing this? I think they're doing it for the exact same reason they were doing it back then. Which is for an intelligence operation, some sort of counterintelligence, meaning countering what some country or enemy or a foreign power or whatever is trying to do in this country to pull information out of us. You take the UFO information, mix it up with some military information, and of course anybody who wants to know military secrets is going to come around saying, ooh, we want to know about this UFO thing near XX Air Force Base. And that way they can start, you know, they don't care if there's UFOs coming from another planet. What they want to know is what kind of weapons and radar and whatever systems we have running there, and just saying, oh, I'm just interested in UFOs. And Doty, for his part, he was actually reassigned and brought back into intelligence and was working for counterintelligence at the time he was on the show with me. And I knew that, but I'm not going to say it on the show because it was going so well. You're just running another disinformation. You know, for one, I don't know that for sure. And for two, I'd sound like a wacko. So,
but chances are he is doing that, and he's putting out more disinfo like he was back then. And,
yeah.
And there's reasons that he would do that, but some people do get sucked up into this stuff and actually sort of become victimized by it. And But people in that profession, that's a thing they do.
Yeah, that's what they do. And I mean, if people are going nuts and writing things on the internet and putting out newsletters and yelling on radio shows, I don't really care. Fine, let them go nuts. The thing was, in Paul Benowitz's case, they knew he was going crazy and they knew his health was getting bad. He was chain smoking, and eventually his family got so worried about him, they put him in a mental health facility for about 3 months. That's where it crosses the line. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really have any problem with people putting out stupid stories about an exchange program with astronauts going to another planet and we getting aliens in return or something. I don't care. That's not going to, you know, it doesn't affect my life. It doesn't make anybody really go crazy. If it does, that's their own damn fault.
Usually somebody's already got some kind of problems. Yeah. And if it wasn't that, something else would have triggered them.
Yeah, but Benowitz did too.
Right. So we're getting towards the end of the show. So I'll just put that out there again. The book is Project Beta, the story of Paul Benowitz, national security, and the creation of a modern UFO myth. And so we don't have any time to really get into your other book, but I will just mention it. We did a whole show on it. Weird California, your travel guide to California's local legends and best kept secrets. And I know some of you listening to the show are from outside of California. And if you're planning to make a trip out here and you can spend a little time, pick up this book, Weird California. And if you're interested in any of these sorts of things, oddball places where weird things have happened, or there's some kind of weird history or something just really strange there to see, it's all listed in this book, right, Greg?
Yeah. All the stuff we put in there was, in fact, some of the really obscure places they kept out of there. So get in touch with me. There's a lot of great places to go in there, very easy to visit. Strangely enough, so a lot of it's concentrated in Southern California, because two of the writers, me and Joe Osterley, we are from Southern California. So probably about 70% of the book or so is Southern California stuff. So if you come into the LA Orange County area, yeah, you can go out and see the Bat Bridge out here in Irvine, where some bats live under there. You can see the Haunted Canyon right up from there, Black Star Canyon. You can go to the Hollywood Cemetery and see where Rudolph Valentino's buried, and Mel Blanc, who did all the Looney Tunes voices, things like that. Abandoned mental hospitals, haunted graveyards, that kind of stuff.
Okay, so we're really out of time right now. So this is Out the Rabbit Hole, KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're also on the web at KUCI.org. I'm Robert Larson, and we've been speaking today with Greg Bishop. He has two books, Project Beta, the story of Paul Benowitz, national security and the creation of a modern UFO myth, and Weird California, your travel guide to California's local legends and best kept secrets. And he's also blogging at UFO Mystic, and you can find that at UFOMystic.com. And Greg, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on again, Robert. Anytime.
Okay. And another friend of ours will be on the show in 2 weeks. Next week, we're going to be preempted by a baseball game broadcast. But in 2 weeks, Adam Gorightly will be here. You want to say something real quick about him?
He's one of the weirdest writers I know, into the greatest stuff, and his style. When I read his stuff, it affects my style so much that I start writing like him. Great books on Charles Manson, Carrie Thornley, and a whole book of essays that you'll talk about when he's on.
Right. I think that's what we're going to focus on in 2 weeks, the beast of Adam Gorightly. Thanks again, Greg, for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Robert.
All right. Will Bruzzo is coming up in just a few minutes, and I will be talking to you in 2 weeks. Next week, again, it's baseball game preemption, but 2 weeks, Adam Gorightly.
Oh,
thanks for listening to Out the Rabbit Hole, KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're also on the web at KUCI.org.